Welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation Weekly Podcast, where we equip students, athletes, their families, and supporters with vital tools and information that will impact their decisions on educational opportunities and careers. Tune in every Thursday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time as we host prominent guests from a variety of backgrounds, such as education, sports, medicine, and the corporate world. Remember, the Black College Sports and Education Foundation is your one-stop resource center. Now here's your host, Gil McGregor.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation podcast. I'm your host, Gil McGregor, and as we come to you every week, we try to bring to you exciting guests who have great stories and great insight about life, about sport, and the things that they've been doing. Well, this evening is no exception. We are fortunate to have with us an individual who, if you are a sports fan, if you've ever tried to play basketball, he has accomplished what everybody who tries to play wants to accomplish. Whenever you hear the great Luther Vandross talk about one shining moment, well, the reason they made one shining moment was because of a team that I guess was one of the greatest championship teams ever. Back in 1983, they were the Giant Slayers. I think everybody would say that about them. But the 1983 Wolfpack basketball team from NC State went up against this formidable foe called Fire Slammer Jammer, and they Fire Slammer Jammed them. And the star guard leader of that team was one Derek Wittenberg. And we are honored today. We are happy today to have as a guest on our podcast, I'm going to call him Coach Wittenberg, because anytime anybody's ever been a basketball coach in college, it seems like they can't stop being a coach. That's not what he's doing right now. But welcome, everybody, Derek Wittenberg. Derek, thank you for joining us on our podcast.
Well, thank you. It's always exciting talking about life and sports and how it can empower people, and especially young people, how your show and what we're doing and what you're doing to pass this experiences and to pass all this good knowledge to the young people today so they can follow their journey of success in life. And this will be fun sharing some of those stories and some of the stuff that I've been doing, and hopefully it can help a lot of others.
Well, we're looking forward to that, Derek, and let's see how can we get this started. I'm anxious just to ask you about that one shining moment and about that season that led to an opportunity for you to win the last game you played. Most people don't get to win the last game they play, certainly if it's in a series that leads to a national championship. When that season started, did the idea of greatness, did the idea of being at the top of the mountain at the end of the season, was that deeply embedded in all of you guys, because you had one of the most inspirational basketball coaches to ever sit on the sideline and win, Jim Valvano. But how did that season start and the progression that led to that one shining moment?
Let me give you a 5-minute kind of journey on how it all started with me just telling you how I got to NC State. So first and foremost, in 1973 and 74, my cousin David Thompson came on the scene, was one of the greatest ACC players ever that played at NC State and won the national championship.
Know him well, Derek. In fact, I will say this. He's a friend. David and I are friends. Know him well. Didn't know he was your cousin, though, but know him well. All right, now.
So I start off with that and say that really inspired me to not only go to college and be a first-generation graduate, but I wanted to go to NC State and do what my cousin did. So I went to a powerful high school in Washington, D.C., with the first high school coach in the Hall of Fame, Morgan Wooten. And we only lost 7 games in high school, and we won the first high school national championship in 78. We went 28-0.
All right.
So my senior year in high school, NC State was my number one choice, and that's why I wanted to go to school. I was excited about that. That's where I wanted to be. And Norm Sloan had actually recruited us. We had a good year. The first year we went 20-8. Then Norm Sloan leaves and goes to Florida. And then in our second year, we get this coach from New York called Jim Valvano. And didn't know anything about Jim Valvano. And the first thing I can hear in his press conference, he said, "I want to win a national championship, and I'm going to look at you guys in 3 different ways. I want to look at you as a person, I want to look at you as a student, and I want to look at you as a player. And I'll never forget those words. And he said, you can talk to me about anything, anytime, my office is open. So right away, we know here's a coach that cared about us, but also had this vision of winning the national championship. First year we played for Jim, what didn't go so well. The second year we went to the NCAA and lost in the first round in my junior year. So our senior year, this is the year. This is it. I mean, this is the year that Jim talked about, and we got to win. We get off to a great start. We're about 7-2, nationally ranked, and we're playing Virginia. I got 27 points at halftime. We're playing the great Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
Time player of the year. And I get hurt in that game and maybe never to return in my senior year.
Wow.
And the doctor said I broke my fifth metatarsal bone, and they said I wouldn't even, maybe not even come back that year. So long story short, our team struggles a little bit, and then they recover, and then I come back probably 12 games later, and we came back. We struggled a couple games, and then all of a sudden we clicked. We beat Wake Forest at home 130-89.
Wow.
We played Wake Forest in the ACC tournament and beat them by a narrow 1 point. Then we played the second-ranked team in the country with Michael Jordan on the team and beat them in overtime. And then this is where the journey starts. We beat the great Ralph Sampson again in the ACC tournament to win the ACC. Now, back then, we wasn't slated. If we didn't win the tournament, we probably wouldn't have gotten the NCAA tournament. It was only 14.
NIT might have been best you could got.
Yeah, we might have gotten the NIT, but it was only 48 teams back there. So we had to win the ACC championship. And then what makes matters worse, we all excited. We won the ACC. We beat the number one ranked team in the country. We beat the number two ranked team coming. Guess what they did to us? They sent us as a sixth seed out west. Away from our fans. What a reward, right? They sent us all the way out to away from our fans and all the way out there. He's got an ACC team that just won the ACC tournament, and they sent us way out west, and we were flying high. And we go out to Corvallis, Oregon, and we're playing Pepperdine, who we should have lost in double overtime game. Came back and snuck that game out. Then we played the great UNLV team, coached by the late Jerry Tarkanian, beat them in the last second game. Then we went to Ogden, Utah, and played in the Western Regionals Finals. And lo and behold, we play Utah, who upset UCLA earlier. And then we end up going and playing UVA again in the finals of the Western Regional.
Fourth time now, against Ralph Sampson.
Yeah, fourth time. And we had never beaten Virginia in eight straight times into the ACC tournament. We upset Virginia again and win the Western Regional, go to Final Four. 90% of all the reporters thought this was going to be Ralph Sampson's swan song.
Yeah.
So when we upset them, most of the reporters went back home. They didn't think NC State had a chance. Then we ended up playing Georgia, who had upset North Carolina. We may have faced North Carolina, and Georgia upset North Carolina. And we ended up beating Georgia pretty handily in that first game. And then we played Louisville and Houston, played that great dunking game in the second semifinals. And we ended up playing Houston for a great team. And, you know, it was a tale of two different halves. First half, we were up 8 points. And, you know, second half, Houston comes roaring back. And then Olajuwon gets tired, and they take him out of the game, and they hold the ball, and they slowed it down. They slowed it down for us, and which fits our style. And then we came back, and, you know, this little number 25 got that ball in the last seconds and heaved it up, and then Lorenzo Charles dunked it for the national championship. Who would have known?
Gil? Stop right there. Was it a shot or was it a pass?
Oh, it was definitely a pass. I know it's 37 years ago, but it was definitely a pass.
I got you, babe. I got
definitely a pass.
Okay. Set that straight. I know there are folks who watch that video all the time, and they say, okay, here's Lo Charles, pretty strong guy down low. So, wait a minute. That was too perfect a catch and a dunk. Was that an alley-oop or was that a jump shot?
Yeah. Well, they know that I didn't pass too much. I was a shooter.
Okay, I got
they're trying to give me assists. You know, but what an iconic moment, the way it was done. and it was a David and Goliath story. Nobody thought. We were a pretty good basketball team. We had played in the ACC, and we respected our teams, but we didn't fear anybody. And Jim Valvano, you got to give him all the credit, the leader. From day one, he believed that we could win the national championship, and we followed his lead. You know, we had a motivational speaker in to talk to our student athletes.
Okay.
And he was talking and giving the three C's and D's, and I said, let me explain something to you. I said, you know, we experienced leadership and what it took to win a national championship. I said, the one thing that you did not illustrate in your talk is that Valvano spent time for us and cared about us as people. In return, we knew he cared about us, and we didn't want to let him down.
Okay.
We trusted him from day one. So the players know if the coach is real. The players know if the coach cares about him. You cannot fake that. So in a simple sense of a team in leadership, we had a leader that understood us and cared about us as people. Because remember, he talked about us, I want to think about you as a person, as a student, and as a player last. And sometimes today, we as coaches have compromised the fact that we want to win and talk about sports, but we don't want to build the relationships, and then we don't want to talk education to our kids. We think every one of our kids are going to go to NBA, going to go to the NFL, and make millions of dollars. But guys like me and you, we talk about the 99% of taking sports and using that experience to be successful in life. All of you are not going to play professional, but a lot of you are not even going to play in your same sport.
Oh, yeah.
You need to take advantage of the opportunity and get better as a person, get a great education, connect with people, and find your journey and find your way of success in life. There's so many different people that are successful in every sector of life. We cannot always pay homage to people only that play sports or in entertainment.
Oh, well, there's no doubt about that. You talk about the odds. I remember years ago whenever the Hornets Arena was built down in Charlotte. And one of the best illustrations that came to me about your chances of playing that Sunday afternoon in the NFL or playing that 82-game schedule with the NBA. And the illustration was, if it was a sellout at the Charlotte Coliseum, it'd be 24,000 people in the arena. If those 24,000 people were high school athletes, two of that 24,000 would make money playing sports. That's an eye-popping, realistic look at the opportunities to make money playing sports. But the other opportunities that you're talking about, to grow, to become somebody of substance, to be a leader, and to be a good follower even, are the things that sports can teach people. But a lot of times, the message not gotten to the player, but it's also people who are around it that pull for you or pull against you might not help that message either. When you talk about leadership, and when people see Coach Valvano, we know all the things that happens through the ESPN, the Jimmy V Foundation, and the cry and the laugh and the think daily is what he says everybody has to do. You know, you had a good day. You can't live no better than that. Fill us in on some of the things that he said to you guys that not only got you going, but kept you going, particularly that last year.
Well, one thing about Coach Valvano, he was very, very positive. He may internally or by himself may have doubts about certain things, but he showed unshakable faith and confidence when things went bad. When I went down and the team struggled, he kept his positive attitude and kept the team together, kept the team on the vision. One of the phrases that we did when I produced the 30 for 30, survive in advance. You know, you got to survive the tough times, and you got to keep on advancing. That's persevering. And Jimmy was like that. He wasn't like that just doing that championship run. He was like that every day.
Okay.
I've never seen him with a down day. Like, one thing I talk about when I speak is that one thing that you can control, you know, is that you can control your attitude every day.
Yeah.
If you wake up in the morning and be thankful and humble for that, you can say, I'm going to have a great day. You can be positive about that. You can control that. And a lot of times we take for granted. Jim Valvano always had that upbeat personality and always was uplifting. And that was one of the keys for us. And he always wanted to enjoy life and have fun. Even when we were practicing, his biggest thing is for us to work hard, but we want to have fun with it. We want to enjoy ourselves. So he was an unbelievable motivator, not just in game time, but every day he gave us a great motivation. And it wasn't always about basketball or sports. It was about what you got to do in your daily life. And that's what was really special for that man and really helped us in that journey.
Derek, you talked about being from the D.C. area, and our paths have some touch points that I find very intriguing as we talk, including me breaking my fifth metatarsal in my left foot while I was trying to play basketball back in the day. And, of course, you had to remember all of the scores of the times you beat Wake Forest. I think that's just a little bit too vivid for me, but I'll accept that. Because, you know, being ACC brethren. But when you talked about the pull, the lure of your cousin getting you to go to NC State, were there other thoughts of other institutions that maybe had you thinking? I mean, you're right there in D.C., and you had to see the loveliness of a Howard University from time to time, and certainly that had to cross your mind. But whittling it down to being NC State, it was that family connection more than anything else that took you there?
Well, it's a family connection, and back then the ACC was the only conference that was on TV. So you saw the ACC on TV. TV was big back then. So now I knew about Howard University. I knew about Georgetown. I knew about George Washington. But now, when you look at TV and you see, well, man, golly, I like to play in the ACC. Everybody's dream was to play in the ACC. If you was a top player, you wanted to play with the best and you wanted to play at the top university. So it had nothing against none of the other great schools in the area. It's just the fact that the exposure that NC State, my cousin, and all that brung to you really made you gravitate to playing in the ACC. So that's really how it came about for me as an individual that, man, you know, NC State is a place I really want to be.
Well, you know, NC State, and another touch point, I was recruited pretty heavily by Coach Norm Sloan and had a chance to sit in his office, you know, and being in that city of Raleigh, I ended up going to Wake Forest because I'm from a really, really small town in North Carolina. Wake Forest is a little bit smaller, and I thought I could maybe navigate that campus and those few thousand students a little bit better than the size of an NC State or a Maryland or Carolina. But the whole feel of being in the South, although D.C. isn't so far north, but that's a big step coming from the district down to Raleigh Triangle area. How did you make that transition to be able to culturally exist in something that's a little bit different than what you grew up in?
Well, you know, in Maryland, because the busing started in the 70s.
Yeah.
So I didn't know nothing about being in a segregated school. I went to elementary school where it was a mixed school. I went to DeMatha where it was half and half. It was a mixed school. So I'd never been in an environment that was solely segregated, was all white or all black school. I always went where it was a mixture of folks on either side. So when I got down to North Carolina, not just North Carolina, but Central and A&T. And
I felt like
the whole, even Fayetteville State, I figured I was culturally, I was in a good place because I felt like that I can have friends and make connections at not just NC State, but all the schools. So I think the whole state of North Carolina and all the access that I had, my other friends that came to college that went to A&T and Winston-Salem State and Central, you know, I could gravitate to them and also be in proximity with NC State, also have that experience as well. So for me, it was just great having all the other university system schools along with helping me with my whole total experience at NC State. I had an incident. Well, a good friend of mine, Percy Mormon, I don't know if you remember that he was accused of a crime and he ended up going to jail for 26 years.
Wow.
That was pretty shocking. That was pretty shocking for me as a kid in NC State and one of my friends ended up going to jail, you know, of a charge of sexual assault or whatever it was. That opened my eyes but it didn't change, you know, my perspective of and my purpose, why I was NC State and how I had to treat people and understanding, because colleges, as you know, college is an ideal world. And sometimes you're in this ideal world, and then you are shut out from the real world. So whatever's going outside of the ideal world of college, you haven't experienced that yet. You only experience what you have to deal with in college. And I think that with the support people I had around me, with my coaching staff and my teammates, it really made for a good adjustment for me at NC State.
You talk about the youth that you're involved with now, and I suppose when you look back at the people that may have influenced you in the Maryland, D.C. area, who are some of the names of folks that talked to you whenever Derek Wittenberg was getting ready to become Derek Wittenberg before he got there?
Well, there's so many names. I could say, you know, Harry Carter. I could think about my boys club coach, Mr. Brown, who kicked me off the 185-pound team because I used profanity.
Tell us about that.
I was one of the best players on the team, and I was in a competition to be the punter, and I thought I should have been the punter, and I said a bad word. And he said, "What did you say?" And I said a bad word, and he suspended me, knowing that I was one of the best players on the team.
Wow.
And the team suffered to teach me a lesson. And he didn't play me until the last game of the season, one play. And I tell you what, I never said another profanity word after that. It taught me a lesson. It taught me a huge lesson. I had all kinds of mentors, people in the community that encouraged me. Even when I got to the States, I had the late Dr. Hobbs, Dr. Beasley, my registrar, Dr. Joanne Bird, Mrs. Alonzo, my Spanish teacher. I had Dr. Wandra Hill, who was in mathematics. I had Dr. Witherspoon and Dr. Clarence. They were the first African-Americans that got degrees and PhDs. All those support people at NC State really touched me, put their hand on my shoulders, talked to me for 5 minutes. That's why I was the first athlete, you know, at NC State to give the commencement speech to computer science.
Oh, right.
I didn't talk about sports one time. I talked about my relationships. I talked about education. I talked about the opportunity I had to introduce Ronald Reagan when he came in 1984. I talked about my experience meeting Barack Obama in 2016 when I went to the White House with the 83 team. I talked about how I was an educated individual, and I just didn't rest on my laurels because I won a national championship. There's some other things that I have accomplished for the last 35 years. And I said, and now I finally, in my later years, understand my purpose and how to utilize all the experience. My purpose now is to empower others, is to make sure they believe in themselves and they take advantage of all the great opportunities that they have. So to those experiences and my mentors starting back, and don't forget, I had outstanding parents. The late Don and Lillian Wittenberg were very, very supportive, very positive, and hardworking, good people that believed in me and encouraged me. And in the old days, you know, we know we got whippings. So we know how to act right, and we respected authority. It wasn't no timeout. You know, said, "What you do, boy?" Whoop, knock your side to your head. Wasn't no time out. So basically, you know, we all are not perfect, but basically we have avoided making some of the dumb mistakes because of the discipline and what our parents taught us and what our mentors and people around us. It's about kids not making the dumb mistakes. And thank God that I've escaped some of those and I can continue to escape some of those dumb mistakes that people make.
Derek, we at our foundation, we're trying to do the things that you talk about doing. And we know you have a foundation. We have a program called CPAP. And what we're trying to do is encourage young people to go on and get more education, not let high school be the last stop. And that can be going to a community college. That can be going to a junior college. That can be going to a technical school. It just means continue. And I think that there's also a saying that you talked about earlier that I believe that you guys had, and the last part of it was in finish. So we're trying to get young people to finish. How have you been able to, through your foundation or through your mentorship, gotten young people to continue to go and try to be better themselves through education?
Our mantra for the Derek Whitberg Foundation is dream, believe, work, now finish.
Now
everybody
finish.
Starts off with this big, big dream, and they have this vision. And then now when they continue to work on it, that's when the ups and downs happen. You know, you have your trials and tribulations to do the work. And that's why we put in there believe, dream, believe. You got to believe through that process of working that things are going to work out. And then now, what is the final project? You have to finish. You have to finish school. So we advocate for juniors and seniors in the state of North Carolina, helping some of these kids finish college. Some of them get started good through their freshman and sophomore years and even a junior year, but sometimes they can't get over the hump. They have some kind of hardship in their family, something tragic happened, and they feel like they just got to quit and don't finish. And we want to advocate for those good students. We want them to finish school. And so we're continuing to raise a lot of money. We've given away 79 scholarships in a four-year period. We're going on our fifth year.
Wow.
We almost had $400,000, our goal, in our sixth year to get to a half a million. Right now, we support St. Augustine, Shaw, Meredith, all-girls school, Wake Tech, Peace, a small private school in NC State. Our biggest vision is that we want to support all of our local schools and want to support the 17 university system schools as well. So we are pushing and fighting to support all these schools in some manner. And it's just like the guy, Mr. Smith, at Morehouse, who erased all the debt of all the Morehouse students. Gave him 40 million. You know, we need more of that because, you know, the average, there's $1 trillion of college debt. And these kids in North Carolina leave school with an average of $28,000 of college debt. But some people can't get out from under this college debt for the rest of their lives. So we're trying to get the word out there. Hopefully this concept can grow. It can go to other states. Other people can catch on. But we got to help this young generation in college. College is getting much more expensive. Kids are not passionate about going to school. But like you said, you know, we got great junior colleges and technical schools and schools like Wake Tech and many others, at least small private schools that, you know, that kids can go to. And also you can gravitate and go to the bigger colleges, go to Wake Forest, go to NC State. I mean, you could get a great education if all of our colleges in the state of North Carolina. And what they're missing is that not just a great education, but you can get a great experience, college experience. Me and you know that college experience is valuable.
Oh, yeah.
And it's priceless. So let's not give up on that. Let's try to encourage these school kids to go to school.
Where did this journey start, Derek? What was the thing or things or people that got you interested in heading in this direction? I know you're still very much involved with your alma mater, with NC State, and you're an assistant or associate athletic director and involved so much with all the athletic programs there. But this sounds like a passion and a love that you have to pursue in addition to your walk that takes you to work every day.
Well, I came back to NC State in 2013, and I told Coach Godfrey I'll come back on two conditions. Number one, that I'm not really interested in coaching basketball no more, and I'll help you the first 2 years. And I said, number two, that I need to be involved in the university in a bigger capacity. I want to be able to help all of our students. I want to be help our school in fundraising. I want to be an ambassador for our school. I want to show people what the experience of NC State has done for me and what you can gain and how to take advantage of this experience. And so after 2 years, I moved to administration, and my passion is always as a first-generation graduate is that education is always going to be important. It's going to be important for our future. It's going to be important for everything that we do in life. And so in that role in NC State, I needed a little something more. So the Sheraton Hotel and the Jimmy B Restaurant, they asked me would I start a foundation. It's something that you can help the community that gives us the Sheraton a presence, gives Jimmy B a presence. And I said, only one condition, I want to start a foundation and I want to do an education. So my wife is the executive director. She does a great job. We have a board. and we're just running with it. We're excited about it. We're doing great things, and we're just trying to get the word out. I think it's to raise money and give it away.
Man, that is such a great story. And again, you say things that touch me because sort of on the same paths, maybe not at the same place, but on the same paths. And one of the things that interests me, and I'd like to hear just a little bit more about it, is the 30-30, the whole series. And the fact that when they make those series and they have a time, you got a couple of hours with yours. And talk to us about that particular project and how that came about and how it became so successful.
In 2013, I called my friend up. I was a coach at Fordham University, and I had a great run there, and I got fired. I'm sitting on my couch, and I'm watching the film The Fab Five about the team at the Fab Five, the five players at Michigan.
Michigan, yeah.
And I called my friend up, Jonathan Hawk, who worked at Hawk Films, who did several films for ESPN. I said, Jonathan, I said, the NC State film is a great story. I said, we got to tell it. And we started in 2011, and ESPN turned me down twice. TNT turned me down. CBS turned me down. I came back to ESPN the third time. The third time's a charm. So it took us 2 years to put this project together. It's the first two-hour film of the 30 for 30 series. And as of today, since 2013, this Christmas, 68 million people watched Survive in Advance.
Wow.
The first two-hour film, an Emmy Award-winning film, Survive in Advance. 68 million people on Christmas Day watched that film.
Outstanding. 68 million. Way to go, D. Winberg. Wow.
So people talk about, they write books, but I tell stories.
Yes.
And to me, it's nothing better than visualizing and having people visually telling stories. And that film tells a story of persevering. It tells a story of a great man who tragically lost his life for a dreaded disease and cancer. How a team of ordinary kids from all walks of life came together and bonded in a chemistry with no jealousy, no envy. A team that really is an example of a word. People put the word chemistry, but we actually practiced it. We had it. And nobody looked at nobody a different way. It's an unbelievable story. It's like the Remember of the Titans.
Yes,
It's an unbelievable story. And it was just so real. And so I thought that to me, in Jonathan's credit as a director, he put it together, but he allowed me to tell him the journey and the trust in him and allowing me to tell him about these guys, about my coach, about the teammates, and how we were the example of chemistry and the way you can build a team to win it all. And we told that story. We didn't know how good that story was going to be. We didn't know. We just wanted to tell the story. And it ended up being an outstanding story that people are still watching today.
Well, certainly just the whole aura about Coach Balvano and his encouraging people to never give up is something that has resonated throughout this country with people who suffer with that dreaded disease or suffer with any other infirmities or limitations. And that chemistry that you talk about, who were some of the guys that you're staying close to that was on that team and that y'all still interact with each other? Let people know about who that team was.
Well, the film started before our teammate Lorenzo Charles suddenly passed away in an accident. And I said this in the film. I said, guys, we need to get together at least once a year or we'll be going to get together as funerals. There's no reason for us to have such a special moment in time, in history for NC State, for us not to get together, and just embrace each other. There's nothing wrong with that. And so, to me, I consider myself the spearhead to keep everybody together. I talked to the speaker today. So I said, nobody taught me, and I didn't read in the book how to lead. But if I admire my parents and I admire the mentors, I learn leadership by watching the examples of people around me. It's like what you hang around is what you become. So if you watch a lot of positive leadership, if your parents was good leaders and very positive, and your mentors and, like you say, your coaches, then you learn leadership from them. You don't have to read it in a book. So everybody says all to me, how did you become a leader? Because of the people around me. You learn more by absorbing the positive energy in the positive people around you. That's how I came to live. Nobody told me, hey, step up and challenge the team. Nobody said that.
Yeah.
I had the right to challenge the team because I was one of the hardest workers. I believed in my coach. I believed in my teammate. I was a fierce competitor. And I wanted to win as bad as anybody else. So I was willing to sacrifice myself, and I wasn't afraid to call out myself, and I wasn't afraid to call out my teammate and say, listen, guys, we got to step up. It's the one thing I have to go back, Gil, and tell you that I compromise, and I tell people this all the time. When I go and speak in front of companies or go and speak at teams, it's one thing. I should have been a better student. I compromised that. I should have been a B or A minus student. But we compromise some things. If you're going to better yourself, you want to be a better person, you want to be the best athlete you can be, and you want to be the best student you with. But you know what? At some point in my career, I started hanging around with people with dummies. And then I figured out I had to go to the library because all the smart people and all the pretty girls were in the library.
They were in the library.
And so, hey, dummy, go in the library with the smart people. Stop hanging out with all the dumb people, with all the C people. Go to the library. Get into the right environment. So when I started coaching, I started taking my Wagner team, and nobody knew. I started saying, why are your kids doing so? So I put up, we don't do study hall in the room. I do study hall in the library.
Yeah.
So they're in the right environment around the white. Hey, it's a person over. That's a smart person. Ask that person what's going on.
And like I said, there's a reason that person is smart, because that person studies.
They in the library. They in the library. If I asked our student athletes right now, I bet you, how many of y'all have been in the library? We got one of the top libraries in the country. Governor Hunt's name is on it. Jim Hunt's name on the library. I bet you our students ain't been in there. I bet you our student athletes ain't been in the library. We got two great libraries. Listen, you got to maximize. Don't compromise. Be the best person. Be the best student. Be the best athlete that you can be.
And an example of the best phrase, surviving in advance, is obviously what Derek Wittenberg, you have done and you are doing. Let the people know, if they want to be a part of what Derek Wittenberg is doing through his foundation, how they can contact you, how they can become involved with your foundation.
Well, you can go to www.thedwfoundation.org. If you go to dwfoundation.org, you'll see our events and all the things that we're involved in. You'll see all the students. My wife does a great job with our social media. You can go on our website and see what we're doing. We support other organizations. I'm also a founding member of the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research. So we're involved. I'm a sole believer in not just pushing my mission of NC State, of DW Foundation, of Jimmy V Foundation. I'm a community man. And what does community mean? Community means being present and being involved. So last year I was 192 events between our community here in North Carolina, in Raleigh, NC State, DW Foundation, and Jimmy V Foundation. So I think everybody can support everybody a little bit. If we do that, boy, what a team of community we can be.
Outstanding. And that's why I want you to tell everybody that, and we want to tell everybody that they get a chance to support this, because we're involved in Black College Sports and Education Foundation, because what we're trying to do, Derek, we're trying to keep the doors of HBCUs open. We're trying to get the young men who can have a dream, who are willing to work hard, to go to school, to understand that there are opportunities for them to go and learn and have that college experience, to make those contacts. We've got a program called CPEP, which we help to prepare them to get out of high school, to get into college, and be successful once they get there. And we want everybody to look at our foundation, our website, and see how they can participate and help us with funding, help us with the programs that we have, and help us in finding young people who can become outstanding men such as you are, Derek Wittenberg. And we want to thank you for sharing your story, sharing NC State's story, sharing the story of your mom and dad and how they raised you with us here at the Black College Sports and Education Foundation on our podcast. God bless you, and thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you. This is a wonderful opportunity for me to support you all. We believe that the Derek Wittenberg name, the Wittenberg Foundation, transcends race. We want to help all of our students. We've been a great supporter of Shaw and St. Aug, the great George Williams.
Yes, good friend of mine, coach, personal friend.
One of my biggest mentors who mentored me in North Carolina. If George Williams asked me to run across the bridge, I would not question that man.
You mean Sir
what
George Williams?
Great Sir George Williams.
Sir George
if he tell me something, I don't even question it.
He's been a guest on our podcast. And George was in grad school at Wake Forest when I was a senior. So we were actually in school together. So I know Sir George Williams quite well, quite well.
Man, has won 39 championships. He is the winningest coach in the state of North Carolina, bar none.
Yes.
Sorry, Coach K, you in there too. Let's not forget about the great George Williams.
I appreciate you. He'll appreciate you shouting him out like that. And we hope that you will come back and be with us some more, and we hope that you will find a way to maybe give us some insight, some directions, and some encouragement to help us survive in advance here at Black College Sports and Education Foundation. And we just want you to know how much we appreciate you, and let us stay together, let us stay in contact, and let us survive in advance.
Absolutely. Don't let this be my last time.
Okay, Derek. Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'm Gil McGregor, and that has been the great Derek Wittenberg. One shining moment back in 1983, North Carolina State wins the national championship. And this young man, from that point on and even prior to that, has been winning championships for the community and for young people who go through his foundation and through all the things that he can help them learn. I've been your host, Gil McGregor, and we ask you to join us next week for more interesting things, interesting people, good information. And as Maya Angelou has always said, when you learn, teach. When you get, give. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to the podcast. For more information about us, please visit our website at www.bcsportsfoundation.com. Also, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at HBCU for life. That's HBCU, the number 4, life. To be a potential guest on our podcast, contact Ed J. Hayes at ed.j.hayes@gmail.com. Tune in next week for another amazing show.